भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो 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 भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 5, Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam. Text 16. Vichakshana Asya Arhati Veditum Vibho Ananta Parshaya Nirvitai Sukham Pravartmanasya Gunai Anatmana Tata Bhavan Darshaya Cheshtitam Vibho Vichakshanasyarhativeditam vibhor anantaparasya nivrittitasukham pravartamanasya gunairanatmanas tato bhavandarshaya cheshtitam vibho Vichakshanasyarhativeditam vibhor anantaparasya nivrittitasukham Tita Sukham Pravartamanasya Gunairanatmanas Tato Bhavandarshaya Chestitam Vibho Please repeat. Vichakshana
Vichakshana
Very expert
Very expert
Asya
Asya
Of him
Of him
Arhati
Arhati
Deserves
Deserves.
Veditum.
Veditum.
To understand.
To understand.
Vibho.
Vibho.
Of the Lord.
Of the Lord.
Anantaparsya.
Anantaparsya.
Unlimited.
Unlimited.
Nivrittita.
Nivrittita.
Retired from.
Retired from.
Sukham,
Sukham,
material happiness.
Material happiness.
Pravartmanasya,
Pravartmanasya.
Those who are attached to.
Those who are attached to.
Gunai,
Gunai.
By the material qualities.
By the material qualities.
Anatmana,
Anatmana.
Devoid of knowledge.
Devoid of knowledge.
And spiritual value.
And spiritual value.
Tata,
therefore,
Bhavan,
your goodness,
Darshaya,
Darshaya,
show the ways,
Chestitam,
activities,
Vibho,
of the Lord. Translation. The Supreme Lord is unlimited. Only a very expert personality, retired from the activities of material happiness, deserves to understand this knowledge of spiritual values. Therefore, those who are not so well situated due to material attachment should be shown the ways of transcendental realization by your goodness. Through descriptions of the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord. Please repeat. The Supreme Lord is unlimited.
The Supreme Lord is unlimited.
Only a very expert personality.
Only a very expert personality.
Retired from the activities of material happiness.
Retired from the activities of material happiness.
Deserves to understand This knowledge of spiritual values.
This knowledge of spiritual values.
Therefore,
those who are not so well
situated,
due to material attachment,
should be shown the ways of transcendental realization.
Should be shown the ways of transcendental realization.
By your goodness.
By your goodness.
Through descriptions.
Through descriptions.
Of the transcendental activities.
Of the transcendental activities.
Of the Supreme Lord.
Of the Supreme Lord.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Theological science is a difficult subject, especially when it deals with the transcendental nature of God. It is not a subject matter to be understood by persons who are too much attached to material activities. Only the very expert who have almost retired from materialistic activities by culture of spiritual knowledge can be admitted to the study of this great science. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that out of many hundreds and thousands of men, only one person deserves to enter into transcendental realization. And out of many thousands of such transcendentally realized persons, only a few can understand the theological science specifically dealing with God as a person. Sri Vyasadeva is therefore advised by Narada to describe the science of God directly by relating his transcendental activities. Vyasadeva is himself a personality expert in this science, and he is unattached to material enjoyment. Therefore, he is the right person to describe it. And Shukadev Goswami, the son of Vyasadev, is the right person to receive it. Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost theological science, and therefore it can react on the layman as medicinal doses, because it contains the transcendental activities of the Lord. There is no difference between the Lord and the literature. The literature is the factual literary incarnation of the Lord. So the layman can hear the narration of the activities of the Lord. Thereby, they are able to associate with the Lord and thus gradually become purified from material diseases. The expert devotees also can discover novel ways and means to convert the non-devotees in terms of particular time and circumstance. Devotional service is dynamic activity, and the expert devotees can find out competent means to inject it into the dull brains of the materialistic population. Such transcendental activities of the devotees for the service of the Lord can bring a new order of life to the foolish society of materialistic men. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his subsequent followers exhibited expert dexterity in this connection. By following the same method, one can bring the materialistic men of this age of quarrel into order for peaceful life and transcendental realization. Translation again. The Supreme Lord is unlimited. Only a very expert personality, retired from the activities of material happiness, deserves to understand this knowledge of spiritual values. Therefore, those who are not so well situated, due to material attachment, should be shown the ways of transcendental realization by your goodness. through descriptions of the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord. So, Narada has been proclaiming the glories of the Bhagavatam as the remedy for the materialistic disease of man. Although, according to Vedic principles, only a Brahmin is eligible to study Vedic literatures, because only a Brahmin is situated in the mode of goodness and is qualified to enter into the study. But the pastimes of the Lord are so attractive that anyone in any position can be attracted to them. So even if one is affected by the lower modes of material nature, passion and ignorance, if he hears the pastimes of the Lord, he will become purified of such influence and gradually rise to the mode of goodness and then to the platform of transcendence, where he can factually realize the Lord by direct perception. As Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport, on the absolute platform, there's no difference between the Lord and the Lord's pastimes. So when devotees discuss the Lord's pastimes, actually the Lord himself is present. And because the Lord is all pure, when the devotee gives oral reception to the Lord in the form of transcendental sound, the Lord serves to purify the heart of the devotee. The Lord is already situated in the heart of every living entity, but when the Lord sees that the devotee is eager to hear the messages of the Lord, then the Lord, from within the heart, takes up the job of cleaning the heart, so that the heart becomes a fit place for the Lord to reside. Specifically, when the Lord enters in the form of transcendental sound. So the whole process of purifying the heart is achieved, or is begun at least, and ultimately achieved, through hearing the pastimes of the Lord. Now, although the Lord's pastimes are the proper medicine for the materialistic disease of the conditioned soul, the disease is such that the conditioned souls do not want to hear about the Lord. They do not like to hear the Lord's glories. Therefore, the devotees who are compassionate to the fallen souls of the modern age think of novel ways to present the Lord's message so the conditioned souls will be open to receive it. Because only when the conditioned souls do receive the transcendental messages of Godhead? Can their polluted hearts be cleansed? And can they be elevated to the platform of scientific knowledge of the Supreme Lord? So, although Srila Prabhupada has translated the Srimad Bhagavatam with elaborate purports, devotees also write articles where they present the same philosophy in novel ways to attract the attention of the fallen souls. Srila Prabhupada himself demonstrated the method in Back to Godhead magazine, where Srila Prabhupada took various current topics and discussed them in the light of the Bhagavat, in the light of transcendental knowledge. And therefore, people who are absorbed in mundane subjects were attracted and gradually purified by the injection of the transcendental message. When one reviews the old issues of Back to Godhead published by Srila Prabhupada in India, one sees that he deals with all sorts of contemporary topics. Of course, he dealt with the issue of war, and the effects of war, but he also dealt with other topics. For example, he dealt with Dr. Radhakrishna's translation and commentary on Bhagavad Gita. Of course, that was a controversial topic because Dr. Radhakrishna was a big man in India. But Prabhupada very tactfully began his exposure of Dr. Radhakrishna's faults in his presentation by quoting the saying that it is better to have a wise enemy than a foolish friend. And therefore, he was confident that Dr. Radhakrishna would be receptive to Srila Prabhupada's remarks. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada raised the question of truth and beauty, that some people say that the truth is ugly. So what is the position? Is the truth ugly or is the truth beautiful? And then he proceeded to relate the story of liquid beauty. To address the issue. And the fact is that so-called material beauty is ugly. But the beauty of the spirit is actually true. So in a very novel way, with an interesting story, Srila Prabhupada discussed the issue of truth and beauty. And as the Bhagavad Gita says, Sat, or the truth, is eternal. And therefore the soul, which is eternal, is true. And the soul is beautiful. And the body, which is made of so many ugly liquids, is ugly, but the body is not truth. The body is temporary and therefore illusory. So just as Srila Prabhupada dealt with different contemporary topics, news items, and even current philosophical issues of debate, and discuss them in very novel ways to create interest in the reader and sustain interest, and bring the reader to the transcendental subject in the end. So Srila Prabhupada wanted his followers also to be able to deal with contemporary issues and discuss them in novel ways through the vision of Srimad Bhagavatam, and thus attract people. And Srila Prabhupada's followers have brought out books on more popular topics like vegetarianism, reincarnation, the ecology, and in the guise of discussing such topics, they gradually introduce more and more transcendental knowledge. So we have to think how to induce people to hear the pastimes of the Lord. Of course, in India there is the tradition of dramatic performances of the Lord's pastimes, and Srila Prabhupada also introduced such dramas in ISKCON. So there's music, there's drama, there's now films, there are CDs, there are interactive CDs. There's so many novel ways that devotees following Srila Prabhupada's example and instruction are trying to induce people to hear the pastimes of the Lord and become purified by the transcendental subject. And the process will continue for eternity. The process will never end. Devotees will always be thinking of novel ways to present the message of the Bhagavad for the benefit of the population in general. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments?
I'm not sure. Prabhupada, he presented, he gave us Krishna consciousness and he presented it in an appropriate way at the time he was present on the planet. In light of what you were saying about how the devotees always are thinking of novel ways to present Krishna consciousness, to what degree do we need to adjust the presentation of Krishna consciousness today?
To whatever degree is necessary.
Mm-hmm. But how do we determine that? Because we feel a little hesitant in some way to we tend to feel safer to just stick to the way Prabhupada did it and his style of presenting it. So what are the guidelines, if you like?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, in a way, we might feel that it's safe to present things exactly the same way. I mean, of course, the philosophy will be the same, but, you know, the presentation of the movement, you know, where people don't adjust to the present reality, they may not be as successful, and therefore there's risk if we just stick, you know, to the same mode of presentation that, you know, people will not be attracted, and the result will be that the movement will suffer. So it's not really safe. You know, because Prabhupada wanted us to preach. He wanted people to take to Krishna consciousness. So, you know, the way devotees have stuck to the way Krishna consciousness was presented when Srila Prabhupada was here has not really worked in many places. And there are a lot of people who are sincerely interested in spiritual life who are sort of turned off by the Hare Krishna movement. So it's not that they don't want spiritual life, and it's not that they're not open to Krishna consciousness, but they're just turned off by the Hare Krishna movement. If they go to a Hare Krishna temple, they won't be attracted or inspired. And therefore, you know, senior devotees are thinking how to present it in such a way that people will be able to relate to the process more easily. Like in the 60s, when Srila Prabhupada came to America, the counterculture was very prominent, and young people were very open to new things and different things and exotic dress and exotic music and exotic dance and exotic food. And, you know, they were looking for something different, but now people are like more established and more conservative, and they're not thinking of, you know, like dropping out of society and tuning into higher consciousness. I mean, they may be they are interested in satisfaction and happiness. I mean, everyone is, but they're not interested in, you know, rejecting the society. They want to be in society, and they want to, you know, if they're successful, they want to continue to be successful. And if they're not so successful, they want to become successful. So they need a presentation of Krishna consciousness that will show them how they can, you know, be successful in the world and at the same time get the satisfaction they want through spiritual life, the Krishna consciousness. So the old mode of, you know, trying to get people to join right away, you know, doesn't work so well in some places. The people don't want to join, and the only ones that do join are like, you know, not local people. Yeah, like Hispanics that have crossed the border, and they don't get many people from, you know, the established society. And if the only approach is, you know, going out on Harinam and giving invitations or distributing books and giving invitations, and people come to the temple, and what they see is very bizarre to them, they won't relate and they'll just leave. So that's why devotees are developing other types of programs where, you know, they invite people into a setting that's more like a home or yoga center, where the ambience is very congenial to an ordinary person, and where the topic is, you know, presented in a way that sort of brings them more gradually to the point of Krishna consciousness. So, I mean, psychologically, that's the whole point. Psychologically, some devotees feel more comfortable with the idea of just doing things the way we did them when Prabhupada was here 30 years ago. But it's a false sense of security because, you know, it's like we feel very safe and secure because we're not changing anything, but meanwhile, you know, the movement is dwindling and becoming irrelevant to the majority of the population. I mean, with Indians who have a sentiment for the Vedic culture, the Vedic scriptures, you know, they can, like, relate to the traditional temple more easily. But they don't necessarily become real devotees. They don't necessarily become pure devotees, even in the broad definition of pure devotee. But, you know, they come for a variety of reasons. They may come because they like, you know, a social event where there's Indian culture and Indian people. Or they may come, you know, with fruitive intentions that if they do some pious activity or pious ritual, you know, they'll get the God's blessing to become more prosperous and successful. So, I mean, that's not, I mean, it's preaching in a way, but it's not really preaching. It's actually what Prabhupada criticized, like showing the deity to make money. It's not really injecting the message of Srimad Bhagavatam into the hearts of the conditioned souls. And, you know, the devotees have to have some realization. Without realization, they can't do it. If they have realization, then they can present the same philosophy in different words with different examples. If they don't have realization, they can only repeat like parrots or, you know, concoct something different. So that's why here we find the same idea of realization, that when the devotee has some realization, he can present the same philosophy, you know, in a novel way with different ideas, you know, in an interesting way. Like, and Srila Prabhupada said we should preach according to our realization. Any other questions or comments?
But you know, in Cape Town, we're preaching at the university, so on one level it's going quite successfully, we're expanding, but to some degree we feel uncomfortable to go there like this, you know. Feel like we should change our dress and not be so different from the students, looking so different. I mean, but at the same time one hesitates to do that. I mean, they do that in book distribution. You know, we change the dress and like that. But even the university programs, probably it would make it a lot more appealing to the students if they didn't have to immediately have these things to deal with. But on the one hand, one hesitates, you know.
Well,
because the presentation is very much kind of geared so that they will find it attractive, covering interesting topics, you know, so we adjust the presentation, but our external dress, you know, is the same, and we look like a whole, you know, if you send a whole team of devotees there, then we just, immediately it's a challenge for people to accept that, you know. So some do, definitely, but I suspect that a fair number.
Well, you could try Western dress. Maybe just the speaker could wear Vaishnava dress, and the assistants can wear Western dress. I think the people will relate. I mean, it's a matter of performing an experiment, see if it really works or not. But, I mean, that could work. Like the people that sort of welcome the devotees, or the students, and people who are joining in the kirtan, and the people who are serving the prasad, they could wear Western dress. And, like the speaker, he could wear Vaishnava dress.
You still feel the speaker should wear Vaishnava dress?
Well, not in an absolute sense, but in the university, it's. Are we talking about the Bhakti Yoga Society or something? I mean, I would think in the Bhakti Yoga Society that. But, you know, it. Wouldn't necessarily have to be so.
How would Guru Maharaj, I mean, practically, how, what would you adjust, say, in terms, say, in America, the temples? What would we change the whole temple model and move away from having temples?
Oh, the temple can be there for the temple devotees, not for the Indians, but. You know, to get people to begin to take interest, you know, more congenial approach. You know, with furniture, they're not, you know. And as far as the dress, again, it depends a lot on the preacher. You know, some preachers feel more comfortable in Vaishnava dress, and their warmth or their personality, you know, sort of, transcends the dress, and people, like, you know, very quickly they forget about the dress. But I could see if someone was more sort of reserved and maybe more quiet, And then, like, if he's wearing Vaishnava dress, but he's not really able to, you know, come out in a very personal way that will make people forget the dress, then it might be better for him to wear Western dress, otherwise they might just think he's like too different, because, you know.
And could it work like in the same, like say within the temple building, to have designated areas where one has these programs, you know? Like saying,
yeah, because, you know, you'll have different programs for different people and they won't mix. I mean, you could use the same place in a different way at a different time.
I remember Bhagavan saying something that in Boston in the early days, not everyone would see, would just be taken to see the deities.
Yeah. Yeah.
How?
Even in the nectar of devotion.
Mm.
Like in the Hong Kong temple, the actual temple room was designed in such a way that during the lunch hour, it was turned into a restaurant. And then they would have yoga classes next door or upstairs, and people wouldn't know that they were being taught by Hare Krishna devotees. And then, you know, gradually you teach them more and more, and then the ones that seem to be more spiritually inclined, they, you know, you can take them downstairs or next door to wherever the temple is, or invite them to a program that's more directly Krishna conscious. Devamrita Swami has one disciple in L.A. who is a chiropractor, but he has programs at his office. And he has two. They're both yoga, but one is like just yoga and the other is bhakti yoga. And when Devamrita Swami was staying here last time, the disciple came for lunch. And the disciple wears Western dress. And the, you know, the people who come to this, to the yoga classes don't know that they have anything to do with Krishna consciousness. But that's just him. You know, one could do the same thing and let the people know that they're coming to a Krishna conscious center, but a different type of Krishna conscious center, but somehow in his own psyche, he feels more comfortable if they don't know it's a Hare Krishna center. And Maharaj lets him do it the way he feels comfortable. But Maharaj also said that most of the devotees that work under him, well, I think he himself prefers the idea that they know it's a Hare Krishna center, but it's a different type of Hare Krishna center. But, you know, a lot has to do with the realization of the preacher and, you know, what works for him, what he feels comfortable with, and what works for him when he does it.
Like we are thinking in Cape Town, as I think I mentioned something to you, it's like because yoga is so popular, Ayurveda is so popular, and these are fields in which devotees can also get into, earn a living, and, you know, attract people.
Oh, yeah. Reach out to That's true.
And when you combine it with prasad, then it becomes very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It just true. Seems like there's so much opportunity, you know. Business people, they're so much interested in spirituality, so much scope, and we can do so many things. Mm-hmm. It seems like the devotees, you know, if we just broadened our... Even when we met with the Minister of Education, you know, they were really in the... His daughter's a devotee, and he's a national minister, and so we met him, and we thought he'd be concerned about his daughter being a devotee. He says, no, he invited the... Actually, he was the Minister of Culture. He himself invited the Minister of Education, and we had lunch, and they wanted to hear how we could help the country. And then they were thinking of so many things we could get involved in, and I was seeing how, you know, there's so much opportunity, but we're not so ready yet to be able to have qualified people who would be able to go into different areas, you know, and present Krishna consciousness. Not directly, I mean, even the minister himself said, we cannot fund you to come into, you know, the system and you preach Krishna consciousness directly, but in terms of values, in terms of principles and so many things, he was feeling we could make a contribution. So in terms of Cape Town, we're thinking of the present temple room to use that as a facility for seminars, for different types of presentations. And then to have a, you know, because there's a push, say, from some of the community to have a bigger facility and a nicer temple room. So you have that separately. But then I see that we could attract so many more people. Even like when Karuna does vegetarian cooking courses, you know, people, so many people come that ordinarily they wouldn't come to the temple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, middle-aged professional people, you know, and you can see them, and then they're so open, you know, they're really open.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in a good location, but, you know, the alternative presentation wouldn't necessarily have to be done in the temple premises.
Yeah, that's also
depending on the location and depending on how overwhelming the temple atmosphere is.
Mm. But see, it doesn't look like a traditional temple anyway, the building itself.
Yeah. Well, no, it depends on the devotees and, you know, how many you have.
Mm-hmm.
If they come and they see like a lot of devotees in Vaishnava dress, you know, even though in their particular room, you know, but again, the location is a pretty good location.
Yeah.
It's cosmopolitan, and we don't have like so many devotees anyway that they're going to feel they're walking into, you know, a different neighborhood, a different culture. So, you know, it could work, but I'm just saying it doesn't
have to be.
Yeah, just the only advantage is it might save rent, it might save a little cost of transportation, but like in LA, there are certain areas that are like very like upscale yoga areas, you know, and they're not where the temple is. And then on top of it, anyone who came to the temple would see, you know, it's a very clear neighborhood of Hare Krishna devotees. It's very...
Yeah, the other alternative is to combine a restaurant with some kind of center.
Yeah, that goes well. Goes well. Devamrita Swami's had a lot of success. New Zealand and Australia. And we've discussed a lot about doing something in LA. There's actually a center in Santa Monica, which is one of the two main areas for sort of upscale yoga and other types of alternative presentations. And I forget which organization, but I think it's Siddha Yoga. But he said they have a very good presentation. And he actually wanted me to visit their center just to see how they do it, to get an idea of how we could do it. But so much depends on the person. You know, it's like the decor of the center and the program and presentation, you know, the mode of presentation can only go so far, but ultimately you need a person that's really going to touch the people's hearts and you know, attract them and you know, cultivate them.
His Holiness Indradhana Swami came last year, or the year before, during the beginning of the university programs. And then he was quite amazed at, because in the beginning we get like, you know, 200 students in one program. And like, people from all that, you know, a whole cross-section of people. So he was saying like, we hardly do this anywhere else. And some devotees visited from London also. I was really surprised that they don't do anything, although there's something like 40 universities and colleges there. Why is that? Is it just feels much more tougher, or what is it that there doesn't seem to be? Maharaj said even in Gainesville, Florida, they just give prasad, they don't do any kind of programs or preaching.
Well, I mean, the people to ask would be the people in the places that don't do it. I can't really speak for them. But I can say that, you know, on the face of it, the people in South Africa are sort of more simple, and there's not as much competition. Like, anywhere you go. I mean, I can give the example of India, but anywhere. If you go to a village, like I went with Lokanath Swami to his village, the whole village turned out without any publicity. All we did was show up, and you know, 2 hours later, the village square was full of 2,000, 3,000 people. Whereas in Bombay, you show up somewhere and maybe 20 people will come, or 30 people will come. Because they're simple and there's not much competition. You know, London, there's so much competition. Not only different presentations of sense gratification and mental speculation, but there's competition of spiritual processes and spiritual groups. I mean, at UCSB, they don't. They cater twice a week, and they're very successful with the catering, but they don't really give classes. You know, once a year they have a Festival of India program, and, you know, they set up the booths and all the displays, and they serve a feast, and there's kirtan, and books, and, you know, Festival of India. But other than the Festival of India, and the catering, they don't do much. Once in a while they're invited to give a guest lecture in a class. And, you know, when devotees come through, they do books. Like when Abhay Charan was here, he would do books at the university 2 or 3 days a week. People are very friendly. but it's like they rarely make any serious commitment. They're just friendly by nature. Because it's California and it's Santa Barbara. So it's very easy to approach people, very easy to get them to stop, you know, talk to them, easy to get them to take a book. And they may even come to the program, you know, Sarvananda's program is at his place. But even the best that come regularly, it's they don't really... They're very few make a serious commitment. Something they're just trying out for a while. But Amarendra Prabhu's son, I don't think he's here now. He was here. But he's been in Gainesville for the last few years. Now he's looking for some other place.
The one drove from America came to Cape Town for 3 months to do Food for Life. She was in the fourth year, final year of university in Ohio. And then, she had no idea, like, she's staying in a temple and going to be a devotee. She was part of her peace studies or something. Somehow she found us on the internet. She found the Food for Life program. And she was attracted, and so she came. And then by the time she left, you know, she was fully into Krishna consciousness. And she said she'd been to some temples, but she'd never seen any kind of presentation that we have. She'd been to some temples in America. So it seems like there definitely is potential.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you should spend 6 months in America and 6 months in Cape Town.
What about these programs like the chiropractor you was describing? Does anyone actually commit from those kind of programs? Do people actually?
They do, but it's a very long and gradual process. Mm-hmm. Even he himself took time to come to the stage where he is. Mm. And that's the thing with people that are more well established. They're not going to just drop everything and join. Mm. They're not even, you know, it's a very slow and gradual process. You know, you have to figure, I think Devamrita Swami said you have to figure like 3 or 4 years before a person is really ready to commit himself.
And I suppose that's really necessary, as you say, the society, the way society is now, mm-hmm. You have to give people that time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, they don't mind. They don't mind.
Yeah.
Like, it's a real challenge to build a congregation made up of people primarily from Western background. I mean, we just know how to do it with the Indian congregation, and there's so many successful models, but it seems like the real, I mean, even in Cape Town you see those devotees that come from the Western background, and it's quite a challenge to keep them, you know, and progressing smoothly and nicely. And then it's very easy to fall back if you're developing the Indian congregation and they're supporting, then you just kind of keep. Like I saw when we spent time in Durban, there's actually so much scope beyond just the Indian congregation, and they have all the resources in terms of fact, but they're just so absorbed in that they don't really break out of that moment.
Yeah.
I mean, they have so many senior preachers coming through all the time. It wouldn't take much to organize the program in a different area with people from different backgrounds. But they just don't do it. They just...
When Indradumya Swami was the temple president there, he had a special program for Europeans.
Yeah.
It was very successful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, enough for the time being. Maybe when Mukunda comes, we can visit the center in L.A., the City Yoga Center. I mean, he really wanted me to see it. How they do it. He went in Vaishnav dress, but he said if he was going to go again, he would go in Western dress because he felt that his presence, dressed as a sannyasi, sort of changed the experience. He felt the next time he'd rather, you know, go in ordinary dress and just sort of observe without altering the experience. You know, that an ordinary person would have.
And another thing is we do everything, we offer it everything we offer free, but people are so used to paying for things. I mean, if you look at the other meditation and yoga and things that are available, and people pay so much money. So a lot of these other programs can be sustained like that.
Oh, yeah.
The yoga, the other people can pay something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's amazing the amounts of money people pay for what.
Yeah. Well, Deva, in the programs where the people just come for yoga, they don't come for Krishna consciousness, they pay. Devamrita Swami says, if you don't want to be Krishna conscious, you have to pay for it.